The following show is closed captioned for the reality impaired. The Jerry Bader Show.
You know the old expression, I wish you were just a little smarter so you would know how stupid you are. I really wonder if Democratic lawmakers sitting in the chambers listening to Governor Scott Walker's State of the State address last night realize how shameful they look at some of the things for which they did not applaud. Some of the economic growth, tax cuts, things that everybody should be able to agree on. I was part of a live blog last night, and I said this, the point where he talked about property taxes going down. Nobody on the Democratic side, or virtually nobody, I can't say that, virtually nobody stood on the Democratic side. And I blogged, what if he had announced property taxes were going up? Would they applaud that? Just curious. Now, a lot of people also wonder, was this the launch of his 24 gubernatorial campaign? And there was more attention than usual, and will it play into 2016? To answer that and a whole lot of other questions about Governor Walker's State of the State address, we are joined now by Governor Scott Walker. Governor, great to talk with you again.
Hey, great to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
All right. First, a longer speech than you've given in the past, and I thought it was... It was the shortest hour in a long time. Boy, you went through a lot of stuff, and I want to take this piece by piece. Let's start with the obvious, the tax plan, and the tax relief that you're proposing. Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald said, I don't have 17 votes for what the governor proposed last night. I don't have 17 votes for anything. I have been actually really mixed on this. You know, you can make the conservative argument that we should address a potential structural deficit, and it's certainly a conservative argument. As you said last night, it's your money. We're going to give it back to you. How do you see what you did playing with Republicans in the Senate?
Oh, I think in the end, the biggest thing that will move this forward is hearing from people. If people go to our website, prosperity.wi.gov, and look at what it means for them and for their families, and then contact members of the Senate as well as members of the Assembly, I think in the end people are going to see that this is a good deal not only for them but for the people of the state. And the point I made in the speech last night that really kind of directly addresses some of those concerns is when I travel the state, whether I'm in De Pere, as I'll be later today, or La Crosse where I'm at now, or anywhere else across this great state, I don't hear people say to me, Governor, you know, we don't send enough money to Madison. We want you to keep more of our money in Madison. They don't tell me that taxes are too low or the taxes are just right. They tell me that the best way to fuel the economic recovery in this state that we've started is to continue to provide more tax relief to the hardworking taxpayers of the state and to the employers. And I think people realize that, and they pass that message on, particularly to members of the Senate. I think we'll ultimately get something passed.
That line that taxes aren't just right, that wouldn't happen to be pointed at anyone in particular, would it?
Well, I think it's a pretty compelling argument that, you talk to people all the time here, just like I do. When I'm out there, I don't hear anybody say that anything about taxes except they're too high. They don't say they're just right. They don't say they're too low. And they certainly don't say keep more of the money, because that's essentially the argument about this whole structural issue. Keeping more money in Madison to use for a future budget doesn't defer a structure issue to the future. The only way that you balance future budgets is by continuing to grow your economy. And one of the best ways that we can do that, we've shown it. While other states have raised their taxes, states like Illinois have continued to see an unemployment rate hover just around or just slightly below 9%. We're approaching 6% unemployment, in large part because we put more money back in the hands of the hardworking taxpayers, $1.5 billion for the past 3 years worth of tax relief.
And that was your argument last night. Look, this isn't a gimmick. This isn't robbing Peter to pay Paul. This is the result of increased revenues because of what we're doing. And I've talked about this in the last week. That's why you feel that you can let this continue to happen organically and not address that right now.
Right. Well, Well, exactly. Think about this. Couple key facts. We put, in addition to the $800 million worth of relief that we provide either through property or income tax cuts or withholding changes where we give people more of their money back sooner so that the government's not collecting interest on it, people can actually use it in the economy. So $800 million in total. We also put $100 million more roughly into the rainy day fund. That rainy day fund today is 7 times bigger because of our proposal, 7 times larger than it ever was at any point before I took office. So that, for those who say, oh, you should set some money aside, no, the reality is we built up the rainy day fund. In fact, even before this proposal, the rainy day fund was, get this, 165 times larger than the day I first took office. As I mentioned, 7 times bigger even than it was at the peak before I took office. We have set money aside, but we need to continue to grow the economy. We paid off our bills. We paid for the raids on the transportation fund. We paid for the raid on the patient compensation fund. We even paid back the money we owed because of tax reciprocity to Minnesota. Now is the time to put more money back in the economy, and you don't do that through more government spending or through hoarding money in Madison. You do it by putting it in the hands of the hardworking people of the state.
And the Democratic criticism of your previous tax relief efforts was that they were token, they didn't have a great impact. You went to great lengths last night to point out the substantial household impact these cuts will have.
Well, it is. First, I should say something you'll appreciate, Jerry. It's funny how a week ago their big talking point was that they didn't want this to go to the rich. They needed it to go
yes.
to working class people and folks at low income levels. Now that they saw last night that that's precisely what it does, now they're backtracking. And, you know, sooner or later, if I say the sky is blue, they're going to say it's red. But in this case, what we did was put it in the property tax relief, more than $400 million. That's 4 times bigger than the proposal we pushed through last October. That means $101 an actual reduction, not a decrease in the increase, an actual reduction on next year's property tax bill for a typical homeowner, $101. It means $58 on the income tax cut for a family of four, two people, mom and dad working, and two kids making $40,000 a year, which is, you know, $20,000 roughly each. That's obviously working family, but one barely getting by, they get the maximum income tax benefit there. And then when it comes to withholding, we're talking about $57.90 per month on paychecks. That's over $520 a year more starting April 1st that people will be able to keep in their paycheck instead of having that withheld by the state government. That adds up to real money.
Yeah, and you're right. You really did. And I'm not saying this was your goal, but this was the effect. You did kind of pull the rug out from under them because that's all they were talking about. And then this does impact that lower tier.
Well, and Jerry, the one other thing, you know, so then they kind of shifted and said, well, technical colleges and K through 12 schools, well, we put more money into the technical colleges. We used it not out of this budget surplus, but out of the surplus at WDC. We put money in to eliminate the waiting list and to do more dual enrollment academies in areas like advanced manufacturing for high school seniors and the technical colleges working together. But we also point out in our K through 12 schools, the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance put out a report that showed that school districts overwhelmingly were able to account for the adjustments we made 3 years ago by using those budget reforms. And I point out that ACT scores are still some of the top of the country, much higher than the national average. Reading scores are up. Graduation rates are up since we took office. So for all the hysteria about the skies falling, it's just not happening. Fortunately, there's just some people in the state, no matter what you point out with the facts, they cynically want things not to be good for political purposes. And the reality is we are getting stronger and we're improving every day.
And you've dovetailed right into my next question. In that speech, you touted a lot of numbers that point to a strong economic recovery here. Let me throw just a few of them out. Personal income grew 4.4% over the year, faster than the U.S. Wisconsin, fourth best in that category. Home sales up nearly 11%. Housing permits up 12.9%. More than 100,000 jobs have been created. And then you listed the number of companies that added jobs. Your goal was 10,000 new businesses. You've already exceeded that number. And as I'm sure you're aware, during this, a Democratic lawmaker posted on Facebook that you were full of bleep. And the reality, that's fine. She can say that. And I'm sure PolitiFact is going crazy, Governor, checking each and every one of these. And God knows how many pants on fires you'll get. But the reality is what the reality is.
It's exactly right. The facts are the facts, and the facts are clear. Thankfully, not for Republicans, not for Democrats, but for all the hardworking people of this state, thankfully, the economy is taking off. More people are working. More employers are hiring. Personal income, as you just mentioned, is up. It is good news across the board, and it's about time here in the state of Wisconsin. I said it is a stark contrast. I put it up early in my speech. I said the TASER double-digit tax increases, billion-dollar budget deficits, and massive job loss are gone. We replaced it with major tax cuts, continuing ongoing budget surpluses, and significant job growth. And that's the direction I think most people want to head.
I want to address what you said about the skilled trades, and this is something I have been harping on, that the dirty jobs, as the TV show called it, shouldn't be a dirty word. And I just want to read from your speech. So many employers tell us they would take on more work and create more jobs if they could only fill the positions they have open today, particularly in manufacturing. We need to remind our young people about the valuable careers available in our skilled trades. Many students, as well as parents and even high school guidance counselors, don't know that the manufacturing jobs pay 25% or more than the average job in Wisconsin and are more likely to have benefits. We need to recognize, and I thought this was huge, the manufacturing advantage we have here in Wisconsin. It means valuing our sons and daughters who are skilled, high-skilled welders and machinists and tool and die operators as much as those who are doctors and lawyers. Here's my question, though, and you talked about how this is being addressed. I have been very critical of the technical college system wanting to be too much like the UW system, and I really think it should be going back to vocational colleges and schools, and my argument is that I think we need a huge revamp to just focus on them training people for these types of jobs.
I couldn't agree with you more, and the only change I would say is I wouldn't say go back. I say we need to go forward.
Well, that's fine.
With an approach that says this is where the jobs are, this is where the needs are, this is exactly what the technical college system is for. And that's why I said we've got to change the mindset. When you look, my kids are in college now, but when you look, most school districts, like the one where my kids, public schools where my kids went to school, most school districts put out brochures that say, you know, 94% or whatever the percentage is of our kids go on to a four-year college. Now, we should measure that in terms of go on to a two- or four-year or post-secondary college experience, because every one of those things are key parts. And increasingly, when you just set aside perception, if you just look at what the needs are to grow the economy, there are the biggest, largest, most significant needs come in areas like advanced manufacturing, where we need more high-skilled welders and CNC operators and fabricators and machinists and IT technicians, and even in healthcare and certified nursing assistants, things of that nature. Those are incredibly important areas. And for our technical colleges, even our high schools, remember when we were kids, there used to be shop class and industrial ed. For whatever reason, about 15, 20 years ago, that started to phase out. What we're doing with the limited resources we have is to say we want to put more into our K through 12 schools. We want to put more into our technical college system, but we're not going to do it with a blank check. We're going to do it in these areas with the requirement that the classes and courses and programs got to be keyed into where these essential needs are in the state, because it's not only a moral imperative to provide a great education to our young people, it is an economic imperative, and that's why we're focusing so closely on these key areas.
Don't we also have to remove the stigma that some have put on work that resembles work and where you get your hands dirty?
Oh, without a doubt. It's why I go, and like I said, I'll be up in De Pere today at a manufacturing site as well. I love going on tours. I said someday in the future when I'm not governor, I want to host one of those cable shows, because we make some of the coolest, most amazing things in the world right here in the state of Wisconsin. And I love to bring TV and radio and crews and newspaper reporters along, hoping that each time we take a tour, people can see that these jobs are dynamic, they're high-tech, they're exciting, they're well-lit, they're in pleasant environments. But you can't get to most of these jobs just by walking out of high school. You've got to have some post-secondary education. And we need to make people understand, you know, if you're a high school welder, a lot of places are starting anywhere to $50,000, $70,000 starting pay. Many are making, on average, $75,000 to $100,000, particularly with overtime. That's not just a job. That is a real career, but we've got to value that.
Final question, Governor. This really has nothing to do with the budget, but it's an issue I've been talking a lot about lately, and I'm sure you're aware. There is a bill that would change what was put in place in the 70s in the state criminal justice system, where all 17-year-olds facing criminal charges are treated as adults, that would be kind of split in two, violent, nonviolent offenders. Former Governors Jim Doyle and Tommy Thompson, who signed it, support this. I don't, and I don't have time to go into why, but I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, that's certainly something we'll look at. I mean, overall, not just on this issue, overall, and I'm someone who, for years, I'm the author of Truth in Sentencing, so I'm a law and order kind of guy. I'm willing to look, and I don't know the bill itself as it's originally written, but I'm willing to look at reforms that people can make the case that there's a more productive way of dealing with this. Obviously, long term, I'd like to see fewer people in the correction system and more people out early, not because we're letting them out, but because we're doing things that prevent the kind of crimes and that lead to being in the prison system in the first place. But, you know, we're going to watch this closely. We've heard it come up. I read the pieces you mentioned that were in a number of newspapers that both Governor Doyle and Governor Thompson wrote. I'm willing to look at it, but it's something that I think is a long ways off before it ultimately gets to our desk.
All right, Governor Scott Walker, as always, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jerry. Bye now.
Yep. Governor Scott Walker, he did have to run because we kept him a little longer than advertised, and I appreciate his time. We're going to have a lot to say about the state of the state. Starting in 5, it's 9:22.
Facebook fan page. Go to jerrybatershow.com.